You're listening to Body Banter, a podcast where we have conversations about the human body in all its forms and from as many perspectives we can find.
We are your hosts, Shagun Yedile
and Claudia Krebs.
And we are professors of anatomy in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada.
Anatomy is for everybody and every body, and we're here to get the body banter going.
We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Body Banter. My name is Shagun Yedile, and I am calling today, speaking to you from Kelowna, which is on the University of British Columbia Okanagan campus in the traditional unceded territories of the Silk Okanagan Nation. As usual, I have my co-anchor and friend, Claudia. How are you, Claudia?
I'm doing well. It's great to be here. I'm calling in from the UBC Point Grey campus in Vancouver on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam Nation. We are so thrilled to have Dr. Christine Palme with us today in the podcast. Welcome, and maybe you can introduce yourself.
I'm just so delighted to be here. And from the 10 minutes that we had conversing, I know this is a welcoming, warm, well-intentioned group. Just after 10 minutes. I am a family doctor hailing from Ontario in Toronto. Practice cradle to grave care, but have an immense passion in two areas. The first being women's health and the second being in immunizations. In the context of preventative care. And obviously the latter is more pertinent for today. And I am just so delighted to be here. You know, in my copious amounts of spare time, as we all know, we don't have much, but you do what you can. I really enjoy these opportunities to educate outside my clinic, outside of formal CMEs, to get some key messages out to not only learners, but colleagues and the public.
That's really great. We're so happy to have you here, and we want to dive right into it. So your passion is around communicating clearly around the impact and validity and clinical relevance of immunizations. And your main academic focus, if I understand correctly, is around the RSV vaccination. Tell us more about that. What does that stand for and what is it?
Oh my goodness, you're going to have to forgive me for the pronunciation. Everybody pronounces it differently, but it's, so RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus. It's not new. It's been here forever. And to be honest, up until about 2 years ago, the assumption was that RSV was just a virus affecting the young of young. And it does, no doubt. And certainly we all remember whatever newspaper or online journal that you read, particularly, I think it was about 2.5 years ago, just as we were emerging from COVID. And to be honest, I call COVID the plague. But obviously there was a newfound appreciation for infectious diseases in general, particularly viruses. So, you know, we go through this lockdown period in COVID, and all of a sudden, you know, there's this RSV rhetoric, initially focusing on the youngest of the young, our young infants under 2 years old in particular. And that's still a problem. Probably another topic for another podcast on another day. But the reality is that, you know, as a result of COVID and during COVID, research didn't stop. And in quite ironic and, to be honest, magnificent way, we were able to research RSV during COVID when most respiratory viruses had, I call it their plague siesta. We didn't see influenza. You know, we didn't see pneumococcal disease because people were staying home, people were masking. Whereas RSV, we were able to recruit enough candidates for research purposes, you know, thus showing us how infectious and persistent this disease is, this virus is. So flash forward, you know, we emerge from COVID and everybody's happy. You know, there's some trepidation amongst certain populations about vaccines in general, because we've been talking about them ad nauseum, you know, with what ended up being 3 years straight. But as a result of this research and scientific evolution, we had a new vaccine platform available to protect our older patients, our patients, you know, I'm going to call it over 60, and I'm sure we'll go over guidelines that obviously differ because nothing can be simple in medicine. But, you know, patients over 60 who are at risk by virtue of simply their age, your immune system ages with you. And unfortunately, I still haven't developed a solution to aging. You know, if you have the golden grail for that, then you share it with me. But you know, by aging, our immune system ages, that puts us at risk. And as we age, we gather diagnoses, diabetes, COPD, so pulmonary diseases, cancers. And by virtue of those diagnoses, we also gather medications that may challenge our immune system. So you can imagine that once you hit that 60 plus threshold or even 50 plus threshold, you're in a different health risk category and things mean different things. So viruses, perhaps, that would have been an annoyance when you were in your 20s and 30s become more serious. They have more implications once you age. And we had a vaccine option available, which opened up the dialogue about RSV.
Right. This is fascinating, really, that, you know, the fact that RSV did not take, like, as you put it, the holiday together with the rest of the respiratory infectious diseases. And I'm wondering, was it something about RSV particularly that made it escape that, that effect that COVID had on all the others? And then secondly, so this is a two-part question. Secondly, how does that manifest? How does RSV, what effect does RSV have on the body?
Absolutely. So, RSV is incredibly contagious. And I think that was the point, that, you know, when other viruses were held by the wayside because of preventative healthcare measures, which still are important, I'm not suggesting that they're not, you know, RSV was still able to penetrate. So being a respiratory virus, it affects the lining and the integrity of our inner workings of our lung system. So RSV itself, you know, can manifest as an upper respiratory infection. You know, patients too, who are of the age where they have younger, children at home. I always tell my, you know, parents of young children that they live with bioterrorists that, you know, present with these diseases quite differently. You know, they're sick for months on end, but, you know, you could have a runny nose, rhinorrhea, a sore throat, a fever for an extended period of time. It's an annoyance, but that's in its mildest state. And if you think of most sinuously, the virus can actually affect the alveoli of your lungs and, you know, affect the integrity of the lining and the membranes. And so people end up with lower respiratory infections that can result in pneumonia, that can result in severe disease. And you can imagine the patients that are most at risk with their comorbidities, RSV can exacerbate those comorbidities. And I know this podcast talks about, you know, the emphasis on the body. Well, the body is not a lung. It's not a kidney. It's not a heart. Things work in conjunction. So when a virus attacks the lungs, we have a cardiovascular, a cardiopulmonary system that's infected. And in patients who are older, at risk, you know, they have RSV that affects their lower respiratory tract. Well, that ends up with cardiac complications, stroke, heart attacks, pulmonary emboli, you know, infections that become systemic.
It's really the beauty of having a family physician here who sees the holistic aspect of the body and of healthcare. And I love how you said the body is not a lung and it's or a heart or a kidney in isolation. All of these systems obviously work together within the context of the individual person. So RSV seems to be a little bit sneaky. Like it seems highly infective and it goes in where air needs to go in. We can't prevent air from going in and it has to hit all the way into the alveoli. And so if the defenses in the upper respiratory system fail, well, there it is, all the way at the bottom. So we have a vaccine for children, right? So I think...
We don't have a vaccine for children. So unfortunately, the rhetoric and the verbiage is a bit off. We have a monoclonal antibody, right, available for children. And that's been updated. So initially, we only had options for infants who were at severe risk, premature infants, infants born with pulmonary anatomic defects. That has since changed. And we have a newer option and more to come that provide immediate protection. So we use the word vaccine just to make things simple, but it's immediate protection. That's completely a different class.
That's really interesting. So this is for kids who are already sick? They get the monoclonal? No.
It used to be kids at high risk.
Okay.
Until last year, public health has changed. And certainly in Ontario, every infant that is born is eligible for this monoclonal antibody made by Sanofi. The brand name is Beyfortus. And we have upcoming, iterations of that. But what's exceptionally exciting is what used to be an option just for patients most at risk is now for every infant, because we understand that, yes, obviously, if infants are premature, if they're born with anatomic defects, they are more at risk of RSV. But a healthy infant, an infant at term, is still at risk for RSV. And the bulk of hospitalizations in Canada and North America and abroad are honestly healthy infants that end up with severe RSV infections. The flip side is that if you're older, so the younger patients have higher hospitalizations, but less mortality and morbidity. In the older patient population, you have high prevalence of mortality and morbidity, right? So it's sort of I can show you a graph. Point being is that it affects the both ends of the age spectrum in slightly different ways, but both are equally as susceptible. The vaccines that we have available, and vaccine in its traditional method, invoking an immune response, are available for older patients.
Right. So that's different then. The approach, because you mentioned the vaccine, which is available for older patients, but is the monoclonal antibody that's available for younger patients. Am I correct with that? So what's the public health approach then? What's the message because people who are lay people like myself or like other people will tend to confuse that, especially in the environment in which we live, to say, oh, no, I don't want a vaccine for my kid, when actually what they're receiving is not a vaccine. And so what's the message for the people, for the public generally?
So I'm going to have to backtrack a bit, because we have three, when I talk about and lecture about this, there's three portals of approval. So there's Health Canada that approves whatever product. Then we have NACI. NACI is our national, I call it the oracle of recommendations. And then we have public health, right? They all differ. Because why would you actually be consistent? And on top of that, in Canada, provincially, healthcare differs depending on where you live. So NAS, let's take NACI, which is our national body. They certainly recommend that when and if possible, the monoclonal antibody is a better option, right? It is instantaneous. It provides duration of protection. However, we also have to add a bit of spice to the recommendations, one of the adult vaccines, Abrysvo, that's made by Pfizer, has an indication for prenatal vaccination. So women, you know, prior to delivery, vaccinating themselves to protect their infant. According to NACI, the hierarchy at this time is preferring the monoclonal versus the prenatal. But of course, medicine's neither, it's not either or. There's often 50 shades of gray. It's very much an intimate discussion that you have with your patients. What is the most reasonable?
But that's so cool. We've got a whole arsenal to fight this nasty little virus,
100%.
Which is great, right? We can look at it in infants. We can look at prenatal care so that the antibodies transfer to the infant. And then we have something for our other very vulnerable population, which are the elderly. This sounds like such a success story. It sounds
it's
like
a triumph. When I gave my first monoclonal injection to an infant who was recalled, when I gave my first RSV vaccine, and to be honest, my first RSV vaccines were administered to my parents. First day they were available, it was Arexv, which is produced by GSK. They were the first available to market. It was such a sense of, my goodness, I now have an option not only to discuss and educate about this nasty little clever sneaky bugger, but I have a tool to prevent as much as I can. And you know, one of the quotes that has always stayed with me is that good medicine treats disease, excellent medicine prevents disease. And you know, that's sort of the viewpoint I take with every interaction with patients, whether that's a vaccine, a screening tool. You know, your body is sacred. There's very little that's guaranteed in life. Life is precious. We know that. We were robbed of time. We were robbed of health during COVID. Make decisions as much as you can in advance to protect your time, your health, you know, your ability to spend time with, you know, your loved ones.
That's very beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. So it's a triumph. It's a triumph of science. It's a triumph of medicine. And we live in a time when we have a lot of mistrust in medicine and science, and a lot of disinformation and misinformation out there around vaccines and interventions and really preventative care that saves lives. In your clinical practice, how do you navigate this with folks who might be skeptical and might not want these preventative interventions? Because, well, I think we're all biased, right? Like, oh yeah, it's out there, but it's not going to affect me, right?
I think that's such a brilliant question, something I deal with every day. So look, what I generally say is that you're not sick until you are. You're healthy until you're not. And the not healthy often comes suddenly. And when I speak to patients who had had the opportunity to have a vaccine and have suffered from a vaccine-preventable disease, they would pay anything to go back in time and change the trajectory. And nothing's guaranteed, nothing's 100%. And generally speaking, you know, we live in Canada where winter, I call it, you know, the throes of Canadian winter that lasts, what, 10 months, maybe 8 months, we never know. We're here sitting in summer complaining about the heat, and I guarantee in about 3 months we'll be complaining about, you know, the cold weather. But Canadian winter means staying inside. Strike number one, you know, you're around people. It means celebrating. Every holiday happens during the winter months. Strike number two, it means traveling, of course. Strike number three, all those things are what it is to live, right? And we want to live in wellness. We want to live with vitality. And one of the, you know, the tenets, the pillars of preventative medicine is immunizations, right? Preventing those immune or those vaccine preventable diseases. And we have such short-term memories, but you know, during COVID, when we were robbed of time, where we couldn't congregate, we couldn't hug our grandparents, you know, grandchildren were waving outside to their grandparents in condominiums. Nobody wants to go back there. And unfortunately now, with political changes, you know, around us, certainly in the States, we're seeing the ramifications of the reemergence of vaccine-preventable diseases. Children are dying.
Yeah, it's interesting. I read this beautiful quote in a book not too long ago, and it was something along the lines of, to be human is to be a body in an environment with other bodies.
Yes.
And I think we often lose sight of the body part of our human existence. So what are your strategies to communicate clearly with your patients around sort of the importance of the human experience as it's linked to the body and the importance of keeping that body healthy?
So I talk about an investment and mundane things. You know, it's so funny because people come and they ask about protein powders and supplements and intermittent fasting and collagen injections. Perhaps those are important, but let's get back to basics and look at the simple things. You know, eating real food, sleeping, socializing, you know, having connections with people, making sure that you're moving your body. I often say that motion is lotion. So those are basic things. And then you add immunizations on top of that, you know, as part of a preventative healthcare package. So when I'm speaking to patients, particularly even now, you know, it's hot weather outside, but cough and cold season is around the corner. I package things, you know, we're entering into Canadian winter. How are you prepared? What is your respiratory package? What is your preventative armor? And that would include COVID vaccines, the updated COVID vaccine. That would include pneumococcal. That would include influenza. And that includes RSV. And certainly, you know, NACI would say that patients over 75, if you're 60 plus at risk, Arexvy made by GSK has a unique indication of over 50. I mentioned Abrysvo has a prenatal indication. You know, those are all nuances. I have a discussion with my patient face-to-face, you know, my 66-year-old male who may not have diabetes, who may not have COPD, but he has a ton of grandchildren and he's planning to go on a cruise with his partner for 2 weeks. What is the value of time and time with your family and wellness and vitality? Do you have time to be struck by a vaccine preventable disease and miss that? And I think when you frame it that way, it's all about cost versus benefit. It's about context. It becomes less about an injection. It becomes less about, you know, guidelines. It becomes more about the humane experience, what you want your body to do for the years going forward.
Yeah, this sounds wonderful. And I appreciate that human-centered approach, that it's about you and the quality of life that you hope to live both for yourself and then for the rest of your family. I wonder, you know, when you're describing all these options that are available, it might look a little bit intimidating for someone who's not working there every day. And so it may be a bit confusing, which actually emphasizes the role of healthcare workers so that when people have questions, they can approach their family physicians or the pharmacist or somebody they trust. And my question is, what do you do when healthcare workers themselves are skeptical? Because I'm finding that sometimes you do have some of our colleagues who are healthcare workers who themselves may not fully embrace this approach of patient-centered approach and giving people the choice, and they themselves may be actively purveying this disinformation and misinformation. And I wonder what your approach or your message might be to patients out there and friends out there to say, how do they get somebody they can trust? We're asking them, to ask all of these questions.
You know, I think that bang on. I think there's some reliable sources. So obviously, you know, NACI produces guidelines. There's also Immunization Canada. We have some wonderful advocacy groups. But I often bring it back to basics. So I understand that oftentimes when governments get involved, guidelines are confusing. And it was, quite honestly, chaotic during COVID. I didn't even understand the guidelines. I mean, they differed. They didn't make sense. So when I speak to patients, I say, I trust science. And medicine is entrenched in science. It doesn't change. It evolves. Because it's entrenched in science. So things that seem to shift or quote unquote change from day to day, in fact, don't, because that is a scientific method. You know, you use evidence and you modify accordingly. I think relationships are paramount. And unfortunately, right now, you know, the medical system in Canada, just because of a lack of personnel and infrastructure, we've sort of lost that. I understand that AI is there, Google's there, but I would hope that most primary care physicians understand that in the realm of what we do, vaccine education, vaccine messages that are consistent is really one of the pillars of what I chose to do when I came into primary care, right? And I think what's glorious now, if we're going to flip it more optimistically, is that we have other practitioners involved, pharmacists, nurse practitioners. And what I would say is that there's a bit of a call to action to not only repeat the message, but have consistent messages.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, medicine is a team sport, right? And so as we're involving all members of the healthcare team, not just with consistent messaging, but also with sharing some scope of practice with pharmacists administering vaccines and really promoting that preventative care aspect that we're, you know, so looking forward to. It's a focus back on community. It's a focus back on wellness and yes. All that. You mentioned that the uncertainty of medicine is part of the reality of medicine.
Yes.
I couldn't agree more. And we live in a very uncertain world and people crave certainty. So how do we bridge that gap when we have folks who may not have the best health interests, but more their best financial interests in their mind, promoting unproven therapies with a certainty that is very seductive? How do you have these conversations?
So what I tell patients, again, is I bring it back to basics, you know, evidence-based recommendations. But I think when speaking about vaccination in general, you know, particularly vaccines that are not covered under whatever provincial program you're under, is while there may be a cost to having a vaccine, there's an immense cost potentially to not having a vaccine. And speaking, you know, in terms of RSV, one statistic, I'm not about numbers, I don't often quote stats with patients, but one number that stayed with me is that if you tragically end up in hospital with an RSV infection, 1/3 of those patients don't leave the same way they came in. And we're not talking about the patients who tragically die. We're talking about the patients who survive, but when they leave unable to return to their homes. They're dependent on, you know, third-party care, they need to go into a nursing home. And that concept of a loss of independence, you know, being reliant on family members, if you have them, being reliant on a system, is remarkably, remarkably scary for patients. So once again, everything in life has a cost versus benefit. I can't think of anything in life that's guaranteed other than taxes. But making decisions that are in your favor, that are based in evidence-based medicine, that support your lifestyle and support the potential for you to live as much as you can with wellness in vitality, which is a huge part of, you know, everything social media these days. And we seem to have missed the messages that, yes, you can have, you know, your protein powder and, yes, of course, you know, intermittent fasting and whatever version of wellness you want. Perhaps, but it's really down to simple basics. It's not as complex as we need to make it to be.
I couldn't agree more, Christine. And I think the other thing that comes through from your talk and from your sharing with us today is how the people who actually take care of themselves are not just taking care of themselves, they're taking care of the family and the community as well, because then they are able to go back to work and be a productive member of their society and of their families, and they're able to live healthy, productive lives. So this is not just about you or the individual, it's about the community as well.
It takes a village. You know, that phrase means so much in different ways.
Absolutely. Well, Christine, we are, unfortunately, as I'm really enjoying this conversation, but we need to round up. This is a question we ask all of our guests, and we'll ask you as well. Because this is body banter, after all.
Yes.
What is your favorite body part?
So I'm going to assume this is not a personal question. My favorite body part in general, I think, are eyes. Fascinating from a medical perspective. I mean, if you want to be really nerdy about it, you know, eyes often manifest disease states much earlier than anything else, which show diabetes, high blood pressure, et cetera. But I think just on a more holistic level, you know, eyes are the window to the soul. And I think they're a part of conversing, they're part of messaging. I think they're very meaningful on a multi-level number of symbols.
Excellent answer. And Claudia, you will agree with that, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. That's really beautiful. I think it might be one of the first times that we've had somebody mention the eyes as body part. Yeah. So, and what a beautiful way of framing it. I mean, developmentally, they're really part of the brain. So you're almost like looking directly into somebody's nervous system, right? So it's, I like that you chose that. I was a little bit hesitant to ask you about your favorite body part because you have such a holistic approach to medicine and to the human body that it almost feels wrong to ask you to choose a favorite. But now that we know the eyes are your favorite, we do have to ask what your least favorite body part is.
Okay, so the in-between part of your toes. Nobody cleans that and they're smelly. And I can tell you when people put their feet in stirrups when I'm doing exams, it's their feet. And it's the in-between, particularly the big toe and the second toe, that little crevice, you need to wash it. Just say.
Ew. And again, this is the first time I'm hearing that from our guest. This is very unique. And I completely agree with that. I know completely from that's one area people don't pay attention to. And speaking for myself, I really don't want to go there. But
forget about RSV, washing between your toes. No, I'm just kidding.
Absolutely. Shagan, do you know what that's called anatomically? I don't.
Interdigital web space or something like that.
Yeah, I knew something webby, but okay. We're just going to go with
space.
That.
It's called stinky space, SS.
Okay. My word.
Okay, great. So we went head to toe from the eyes. The most beautiful, all the way down to the webby, weird space between our toes. Christine, thank you so much for bringing this perspective on preventative care and the importance of vaccination throughout a lifespan, and how vaccinations not only keep your own body healthy, but really contribute to the health of the entire community. I think that's such an important message. In particular, when we acknowledge that our bodies are vulnerable and our bodies can catch disease, and because we live with other bodies, we can spread it. And if we can do something to prevent that and to support each other, we should definitely go and do that.
No man's an island, or no human's an island, but that's
absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks, Shagan, for being here with us again. And that concludes another episode of Body Banter. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Body Banter.
We are Claudia.
And Shagan.
And we look forward to having you join us for more conversations about the human body next time.